This is Dr. Jay Davidson from drjdavidson.com. Thank you for joining me on the Viral and Retroviral Summit. My guest is Dr. Christine Schaffner, and we're going to be exploring endogenous retroviruses. But before we do, a little bit about Dr. Schaffner. Dr. Christine Schaffner is a board-certified naturopathic physician who graduated from Bastyr University in Seattle, Washington. Prior to Bastyr, she completed her undergraduate studies in pre-medicine and psychology at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, Virginia. Dr. Schaffner is passionate about practicing medicine and creating healing spaces. She is the clinic director of Sophia Health Institute, the clinic that she co-created with her mentor, Dr. Dietrich Klinghart, in Woodinville, Washington. She actively sees patients at Sophia Health Institute and through her practice, Marine Naturopathic Medicine in California, as well as Bella Fior Organic Med Spa and Clinic in Seattle, Washington. Dr. Christine Schaffner, welcome to the Viral and Retroviral Summit.
It's so great to see you again, Dr. J.
I know I always butcher the, you want to say that, Bella Fior?
I have a local practice in Seattle called Bella Fiore Organic Med Spa and Clinic. So we see a lot of local patients there, and you'll have to check it out sometime.
Cool. Thank you. So we're going to talk about endogenous retroviruses. So do you mind laying the groundwork of what is an endogenous retrovirus?
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that you're talking about not only viruses, but bringing retroviruses into our conversation in the summit. Dr. Klinghart, with the inspiration of our mentor, Dr. Judy Mikovits, who you've interviewed on the summit, and I'm sure many of your listeners are going to have to listen to that recording maybe four or five times, including myself. She's such a wealth of knowledge. And she really brought this topic to light. And we've been, she came to Sophia and educated us. And then we started putting her protocols into practice. And we saw a lot of our stuck patients getting better. And when you treat patients like we do, Jay, you pay attention very quickly when you've been stuck with a patient and all of a sudden things start to move. And so that's really what brought this topic to light and caused us to go deeper and to try to understand this more. And so when we talk about retroviruses, obviously the first thing that comes to mind, most people think of HIV and the AIDS virus. And so while that is a retrovirus, we also need to distinguish between endogenous retroviruses and what are called exogenous retroviruses. So endogenous means that we actually are born with these retroviruses in our cells and in our DNA, and I'll go over that in a moment. And then exogenous are more about what we get in our environment. So that's going to be something like HIV. We're learning that and exogenous retroviruses are also co-transmitted in tick infections and vector-borne illness as well. Vaccines can be a source of retroviral exposure as well. So that, you know, is one topic, exogenous, but really what we're learning that really is important to think about in the clinical picture are how we are born with these endogenous retroviruses and what triggers them to be expressed. And so just to give you a little bit about high level, what this all means is you'll see the nomenclature, it's HERV, or human endogenous retrovirus. And when you're learning about this topic, there are different categories like we do in science. So there's going to be nomenclature HERVK, HERVW. So this is just different classes of retroviruses. So there's the beta group, the gamma group, and so forth. And why I just bring this to light is that there are many retroviruses. There's not just one retrovirus that we're looking at. And so what happens is we know about 5 to 8% of our own DNA, our genetic material, is actually retroviral DNA. And that's actually a very big number. I believe in the Human Genome Project, we realized that only 2% of our DNA codes for proteins. And so what we thought about was that a lot of this extra DNA is what's called junk DNA, but it actually isn't. There's, you know, obviously a purpose to everything in the body. And 5 to 8% of this is retroviral. And so what that means is that part of our own DNA can be turned, let me take a step back, that when retroviruses are triggered in the body, a retrovirus is an RNA, uses RNA to make DNA. And again, you don't have to, I know a lot of people who are listening are probably not into science as much as we are, but I just want to give a high level overview here. But it uses the retroviruses use an enzyme called reverse transcriptase to make the RNA into DNA, and that DNA becomes part of our own genetic material inside the cell. And so now we have this pro-viral DNA that turns on in our cell, and that creates, we learned that when these retroviral DNA pieces are activated, that it leads to autoimmune illness, neurological disease, and cancer. So I guess, you know, most of us want to know why do these things get turned on, and how, of course, do we turn them off so we can prevent and treat these chronic illnesses that we're seeing in the office.
I love how you said junk DNA, and then you kind of had a smirk on your face like, yeah, there's probably a purpose. We just don't quite get it yet. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, oh, the appendix, we don't need that. Let's just take that out. The gallbladder, not a big deal.
I know. We've learned in science, if we don't know something, you know, we call it junk or idiopathic, or, you know, and then years later we're like, oh, that's why, you know, that's what this was all about. So I just laugh when, you know, when we come up to these topics and terms.
I know, I was just kind of a random topic, but I was thinking about, okay, so we're always trying to interpret what is our DNA, but have mm-hmm. we ever really went down the route of how do we unlock our DNA? Maybe there's mm-hmm. a lot to our DNA that we have to unlock, and kind of made mm-hmm. me think of that when you mentioned the junk DNA and your smirk. So,
yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
So we've got endogenous retroviruses that are basically embedded in our DNA. And then you said through stressors that these things can trigger and then cause health issues.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Exactly. And so what we have found, so there's a number of things that can trigger the expression of this retroviral DNA. So one topic that many of your patients and listeners probably know about is the idea of methylation. So methylation is this whole biochemical process that happens in the body where we're moving methyl groups in biochemistry, which is a carbon and three hydrogens. And what that means is that methyl groups can can silence parts of our DNA. So if you are undermethylated, having not enough methylation support or cofactors, so not having enough maybe methylated folate or SAMe or methyl B12 in your body, you might be prone to what's called undermethylation, and then your body isn't able to silence these segments of DNA, and then that can be one trigger of retroviral exposure. So we look at the topic of methylation, and so you know, Dr. Klinghart, you know, has been practicing for a long time, and when we've learned so much about genetic SNPs and, you know, how to integrate this into practice, I think it's absolutely important and relevant, and, you know, we're learning what to do with all the genetic information that we're getting, but I think we need to look at this in the context also of how does this interact with our immune system, and really what does not having enough methylated folate mean, right? You know, does it mean that not only, of course, all of the important parts of biochemistry and hormone metabolism and neurotransmitter production and all of that, it plays a role, but from, you know, from our standpoint, you know, it's critical in order to have a healthy immune system, in order to keep this viral DNA silenced.
How did we ever really come to discover this? Because part of me thinks, well, you know, we just assume that it's like genetics, but you're saying that it's actually like retroviruses within the genetics that then triggers it. Was it Dr. Judy Mikovits that really discovered it, or was she more of a kind of a pioneer in some other areas?
Well, she, you know, her whole story, I mean, she definitely, her story really is around studying the chronic fatigue population. And so she, in her research, she was able to identify how retroviruses played a huge role in chronic fatigue. And so, I mean, from our clinical standpoint and the patient population we see, I turn to her as the expert. She works, you know, with Frank Rossetti, her mentor, and then she, you know, she's definitely had her pulse on this knowledge. But when you look also, when you look in PubMed and you're interested in this topic, I mean, this is a topic that's really well known in science. And there's not only, of course, the study of HIV and looking at endogenous retroviruses. I mean, they look at this also from a medication standpoint, like, can we use this to our advantage to also fix DNA? So pharmaceutical companies know about retroviruses very well. You know, but the point that I'm trying to make is that, you know, obviously this is a complex topic. And, you know, one of the issues around, you know, when we look at the methylation picture, which is a big topic, I just want to bring it in the context of methylation is really important to keep our immune systems healthy. Because, I mean, I know that you and I both look at health in a very similar way. And, you know, I don't think of, you know, when I think of how do we maintain our health and how to prevent chronic illness and disease, you know, there's this whole idea of, oh, nutrition and take a multivitamin, which is important. But I think about, okay, what are we doing to keep infections under control and our immune system, you know, strong and not allowing not only retroviruses to be expressed, but all the other infections that we look at. I think health is, you know, not being resilient to all the pathogens that we encounter in our environment.
So as retroviruses have become more, I mean, it's still, I feel like the early frontier in understanding these and kind of putting them into practice in functional medicine. Of course, you and Dr. Klinghardt have been, you know, instrumental in getting the word out and even practicing, you know, healing people and helping them through this. Where do you see viruses then fit into the retrovirus picture?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up. So when we think about triggers, we talked about being undermethylated. And then, you know, viruses are, you know, big. Anybody who looks at a chronic illness patient, we look at a number of pathogens, right? We look at Lyme and co-infections, we look at parasites, we look at mold. And then, of course, all of us look at the viral picture. And many of our patients have had a lot of viral exposures. They might have had mono or Epstein-Barr that becomes reactivated through the stress that they're going through. They could have the herpes family of viruses that are the cold sore virus, like HSV-1 or genital herpes, or varicella, which is the chickenpox virus, or HHV-6. So this group of viruses, when you run titers on many of our patients, they have huge viral loads, we will say. So they will have these very high immunoglobulin levels, like IgG levels, that if you're, if a positive is greater than 20, these are 600, 700, 800, you know, these numbers, meaning that the immune system is very vested in trying to figure out how to keep this virus at bay. And so we thought, kind of, you know, my awareness around this is, you know, you can give people antiviral, you know, things all day long, and while they help, you know, do those titers ever go down? Not really, you know. And so, at least I don't see that. And so, it made me think about, okay, are the viruses, you know, the key issue, or are they doing something else in our system that is keeping people sick? And what we're starting to realize is that there is research that shows that Epstein-Barr virus, as well as the other herpes family of viruses, actually trigger the expression of our retroviral DNA. So when I read that, it kind of was a light bulb moment for me that, you know, yes, Epstein-Barr, you know, of course, we need to look at that. We need to treat that. That needs to be in our framework when we look at a patient. But really, is what's happening is this Epstein-Barr virus is triggering the endogenous retroviral expression. And then when that gets turned on, remember, that's going to be, you know, that cell is going to replicate, and that viral retroviral DNA is going to be in every cell. So that's going to create all of this retroviruses can create immune overactivation and also immune suppression. So this whole derangement in our immune system that leads to things like Parkinson's, MS, autoimmune illness, cancers, and so forth. So it just made me think, and as a lot of your speakers are going to give a lot of great information about what to do with viruses, but we really need to look at this in the context, are the viruses one of the key triggers to the retroviral expression? And then, you know, if we look at this level deeper and treat the retroviruses, that's when we get people better. So
we've got essentially viruses, maybe some other types of infection that could trigger retroviruses, potentially toxins as well. So it's almost as if environmental things can then flip the switch on for retroviruses to then express. Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's, you know, an awesome summary of this complex topic. And, you know, I think, you know, like anything, you know, I believe what we're seeing, why we're seeing such sick people is because the combination of environmental factors that we all talk about all the time with patients. And I think if we weren't probably up against all of these, you know, our bodies would have a lot easier time, you know, silencing these retroviruses and keeping our immune systems on top of these infections a lot more easily. But I think this, you know, this idea of it's not, you know, just one thing, it's this multitude of toxicity that we're all exposed to that just eventually the body can't keep up. And that's when we see people in our office.
So a little tangent of a question, but I guess just more curiosity. So there's a lot of arguments in the genetic world, you know, like we did the Human Genome Project and we're going to figure out the genes that cause disease. And then they're like, well, this doesn't make sense. Then, then the whole epigenetic thing came on of, you know, expression of the genes. And now we know like our microbiome, our bacteria are big keys of expressing of the gene. So is this really kind of the next phase of understanding and saying, really, it might not be our genes and epigenetics, like the triggering of the actual genes, as much as it could actually be the triggering of these viruses that then change the coding and expression.
I agree completely with you. That those were kind of my light bulbs that have gone off while I'm trying to understand this in the context of the clinical picture. And I think when we think of epigenetic expression, we need to think of epigenetic, you know, silencing and turning on, you know, these retroviral, you know, fragments. And that I think is really where, you know, I want to, you know, learn more, and I want to, you know, see research go. And I, you know, we're thinking, you know, not that I want to go down this rabbit hole too much, but how do we really identify, you know, in the labs, you know, when people have, you know, this overexpression, when their retroviruses are turned on, essentially, like, how do we, you know, really look at that? And then how can we bring all this understanding around epigenetics to work on silencing the retroviruses? And so there are, you know, Judy is looking at, you know, different immune markers. It's just not practical yet as far as these lab markers that she discusses aren't readily available commercially. They're more in cancer labs and cancer population. You know, that world is more accessible to this type of lab work, but it's looking at differences in the Th1 and Th2 immune system. And the lab work will get there. I'm also looking at NAGLase, but, you know, if you want to talk a moment about lab work, just even looking at, you know, we look at basic labs all the time and try to get, you know, glean if this is one of the, you know, the key factors for people. And a low white blood cell count is usually a tip off. Many of our patients have lower white blood cell counts. So that looks, you know, at the immune system has been under stress for a long time. When you think about a complete blood count, we can get a lot of information around that. And then there's something called MCV, or the mean corpuscular volume. And if that is above 90 to 92, we think about under methylation. So people who are low in B12 and folate. And so that's, again, you know, if someone is looking very undermethylated, we can think, oh, you know, are they, if their retroviruses are expressed. And I don't know about you, Jay, but we see a lot of patients' MCV, like 97, 98, 99, doesn't budge no matter how much, you know, folate we give them or B12. So thinking about this other mechanism that's going on. And then, you know, looking at also the differences in the type of white blood cells that are more active. So in a CBC, you can do a differential that looks at neutrophils, lymphocytes, monocytes, and eosinophils. And depending on the percentage of those white blood cells, we can say, oh, maybe the immune system is working hard on, you know, this infection more. And so lymphocytes, when they're above 30%, we tend to see, okay, maybe this is a chronic viral or retroviral presentation. And so I think the labs, you know, can, you know, be a a little, you can't just treat labs. Of course, you have to look at the clinical picture, but the labs, you can see kind of in the fine print where the immune system is stressed. But no, I agree. And, one other marker that's more readily available is NAGLase, which is an enzyme that gets upregulated when there's a chronic viral load or cancer cells. And Judy and Dr. Ruggiero use this marker as well as potentially a marker of high retroviral activity. So yes, I mean, to answer, circle back more to your question. I mean, I feel that, I think this whole idea of epigenetics, absolutely, we have to look at it in the context of how do our epigenetics influence our human endogenous retroviruses, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I mean, the takeaway for the listener is this is very early on in what we understand for retroviruses. But the important thing is this seems to be a big key with getting people well. I mean, in the last year or two of really diving into the retroviruses at your clinics, I mean, what have you seen change with clients? Has it been kind of those ahas like, whoa, she just came out of this chronic illness that now she seems like perfectly normal?
Yeah, it's just this, again, when you're dealing with this, patient population, progress is usually kind of slow and steady over time. And then some people just, are stuck, and we are racking our brains on how to help them and what's undertreated and what to treat. And so the primary symptom that I saw is this general, energy lift, this sense of, the fatigue lifting, the energy increasing. And that's one of the hardest symptoms to treat for patients. And so that, again, is probably the main thing I've seen, personally with my patients, which is not a small symptom to lift for people.
Yeah. Well, so let's move into, I guess, in the clinical realm, like what herbs or what things do you find effective for this retrovirus category?
Yeah, there's a lot of things. And, we typically put a combination of products together for people. And we use autonomic response testing. So we individualize treatments based on the feedback from there. But again, for the listener, all of these things are, a lot of them are very, safe, so ask your doctor if this would be appropriate for you. But, so I think we've talked about methylation enough, but we have, that whole idea of support. So that's one thing. There's also a process in the body called acetylation. That's another way to silence different DNA fragments. And so acetylation is B5 dependent or pantothene dependent. So we'll use pantothene, which is a B vitamin, in our protocols. And then Judy is very big on looking at the endocannabinoid pathway and looking at CBD products. And depending on what state you're in, you either have access to CBD from hemp or CBD from cannabis with THC. And that seems to have a huge immune modulation effect, for the immune system. We also look at skullcap, which I know you're familiar with, but Chinese skullcap or the active ingredient is bicalin. And that, if you want to read about an herb that has so many different properties, Baikal skullcap not only increases BDNF, which is brain-derived neurotrophic factor, it actually has an antihistamine effect for all of our mast cell patients out there. And then it has a lot of viral and antiretroviral properties. So it's one of these really diverse herbs that we use either in powder or tincture. If you're on any prescription medications, I would just caution you with the dose of skullcap, because there are some interactions, with that if you're on any prescription drugs. And then we are using a liposomal formula, which is, again, the combination of phosphatidylcholine and herbal medicine. And phosphatidylcholine, whenever you combine herbs with phospholipids, it just enhances their absorption and then helps the herbs get into the cell a little bit better. And there's a formula that Dr. Klinghart helped formulate called BioPure NVENV that just came out, and that has phosphatidylcholine plus, it has St. John's wort, which hypericin is the active ingredient in St. John's wort that's antiviral and antiretroviral. There's also reishi mushroom. The mushroom family has a huge effect on our natural killer cells and our immune cells. There's also olive leaf. So olive leaf is a great retroviral and viral remedy. We also use bitter melon, nettles, and green tea in that formula as well, that have some synergistic properties. And, a lot of the research around these herbs are around HIV. And so there are a lot of studies that show that these herbs are effective for HIV. So we're using them also to help not only with the exogenous, but also the endogenous retroviral expression. And then we'll use nutrients like selenium. So selenium is great. We know a lot about selenium for thyroid health, but it's also a great antiviral. One other thing probably in our protocol is we're still on the melatonin kick. And so we're using a lot of liposomal melatonin and also transdermal melatonin. So we're able to get a higher amount through the skin transdermally. And melatonin is not only great for sleep and brain health, but it's also neuroprotective and great for clearing viruses out of the brain. So there's a lot of amazing research on melatonin. And I think just with this excessive EMF exposure that we're all up against, our pineal gland production of melatonin is continually affected. So I think melatonin is a great tool. And then if you have access to IV therapy, we use a lot of not only the normal things that are antiviral like vitamin C IV, but we're using a lot of glycyrrhizic acid, which is an extract from licorice that has a lot of great retroviral and viral properties. And then we use UVBI, which is the combination of ozone and then ultraviolet light to deactivate viruses and other pathogens. And we just started, actually, we just got the Weber medical laser, which is from Germany. It's FDA approved, but it uses different laser light therapy intravenously to help modulate the immune system. So it has red light and green light and blue light and yellow light. So that's a new tool that we're really excited about. And I'm sure there's more things that we use that I'm forgot, but that's just a, overview. And so our strategy is usually using a combination of synergistic, herbs and nutrients, and then other strategies to help, again, silence this retroviral DNA. And, I know this very well. It's like when we think about health, we think about resilience, and we have to kind of change our thinking. We're never going to get rid of every bug or every virus or every spirochete, nor should we. There is that's part of living in the environment that we do, but how do we continue to make sure that our immune system is in charge rather than the pathogen? And this has been our approach.
Awesome. I just love how, this herb, for instance, Chinese skullcap, good for viruses and retroviruses and other things. I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm thinking about, I went to Dr. Watts or, Todd mm-hmm. a while ago, and I'm like, hey, I got this thing on my skin, like on my thighs. Mm-hmm. And he's tested and it comes back to some bacteria I'd never heard of. He looked into it. It's a bacteria from a roundworm of a dog. I'm like, okay. And then tested all the stuff. And sure enough, Chinese skullcap was the thing to, and then boom, straight up. And I'm like, okay.
Oh, awesome.
Bacteria too. But
awesome.
And you mentioned bitter melon too. I'm thinking, well, that's really great for blood sugar. It's mm-hmm. amazing how natural things, like their side effects is, oh yeah, by the way, it helps with this too, rather than a medication. It's like, oh, you have all these side effects, like lose a limb, can't sleep, impotence, die early, natural things just seem like the way to go.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a big believer in that, of course. Mm.
That's so great. I just love how, just so the listener knows, you are as sweet as you are on this interview in person. You have, you have like the biggest heart. And just want to help people. You're like, whatever's going to work, that's what we're going to use. We're going to work through this, you know, with each client and treat them as a person. So I just really respect everything that you're doing in the functional medicine side of it, everything in the chronic illness side, because honestly, as a practitioner in chronic illness, it's not easy. You know, there's a lot of stressors being a practitioner in this world. So I really appreciate everything that you have done for everybody.
Oh, thank you, Jay. That means a lot. And the feeling is mutual, of course. And I know that, you know, when you see the people that we do in practice, it just, I feel very blessed and I feel very fulfilled in my life and my career and my family. And when you see people taken out of their life for not only like a month, but decades, it's just one of the most heartbreaking things that we all encounter. So I'm just trying, like you, just how can we get them back into their life and their passion and their purpose, quickly, because, you know, of course this all takes time. And so I do think that looking at what we just talked about, the retroviruses, it's again, you know, my knowledge is just, you know, limited, but getting more and more with each patient. But this seems to be one of the things that could jump our treatments and just make them more effective and shorten the time from people feeling sick to getting better.
Awesome. Well, as we wrap up the interview, is there anything, so obviously retroviruses are very on the cutting edge and finding out that it's big deal with chronic illness. Is there anything else on the burner plate that you're kind of looking into or testing out clinically that's like, oh, this might actually play a role as well too, and hasn't been covered much?
I feel like, you know, I feel really fortunate that I've been able to work closely with Dr. Klinger, who's always putting, you know, the dots together and kind of why people are sick. And I think we've been really, you know, ahead of the curve in understanding that. And so my focus recently has been really looking at the world of biophysics and how can we not only use what we know biochemistry, but how do we also integrate some of these, for lack of a better word, but energy medicine tools. So we have frequency specific microcurrent at the, you know, the office, which I feel, you know, I've kind of reignited my passion and learning more about how do we integrate that more into our protocols. Also, I just shared with you the Weber medical laser and how do we use more light therapy in our medicine. There's some other companies that we're talking to that do more frequency-based medicine. And that's really exciting, you know, to me, just to think that we can treat the body in this whole other modality. And at the end of the day, it's the synergy, right? How do we combine biochemistry with biophysics to get people better? And especially when we think about all of the electromagnetic stressors, you know, we are up against right now. How do we also use biophysics to ground our bodies, heal our energetic bodies? So that's kind of in my, you know, that's what I've been reading about at night before I fall asleep. we're trying to put all those tools that we have at the office together in a more of a unique way right now.
You just gotta love a passionate healthcare provider that it's like, yep, still researching.
I know, right? I know. My 9-month-old has made everything interesting, but you know, there's, you know, in the edges of the day, you know, I still find time.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking time to do this interview and sharing what you're seeing clinically and just giving your, perspective on it, because it's been really valuable.
Oh, well, thank you, Jay. And thank you for putting on this wonderful summit. And you've done so much for the community, putting all of this wonderful education out there. So thank you for being a pioneer in doing that.
Thanks. Well, thank you, listener, for joining me on the Viral and Retroviral Summit. Be sure to definitely check out Dr. Christine Schaffner. Her website is drchristineschaffner.com. So doctor is Dr. Christine and then Schaffner. Schaffner is Schaffner. So it was Schaffner.com. And then what's the Sophia Health Institute website?
Yeah, it's SophiaHI.com. So if you're interested in becoming a patient, we have a lot of information on the website. And we are in Seattle, Washington, in a suburb, and we would love to take care of you.
Awesome. Thank you for that. So SophiaHI.com. Make sure to share this with your friends, family, and loved ones, and also consider taking it home to own it for your library, as this cutting edge information will become even more and more relevant as more people understand it and the research continues to blossom. Until next interview, maximum blessings. This is Dr. Jay Davidson.